So now this is chapter 12. So then, here in this chapter, now after hearing all these different things, then Arjuna is inquiring again. So after hearing, we've heard in the 11th chapter about the universal form. And this universal form then is, you know, very, I say, an amazing feature that generates awe and reverence in a person, or even fear. So after that display, then Arjuna just wants to establish very clearly about the devotional path, that is better than the impersonal path, because worship of the Vishwarup is considered part of the impersonal sadhana. If one only sees the Vishwarup as supreme, then he doesn't get to the supreme, or actually to the devotional platform. So he wants to just clarify this. So then Arjuna here inquires, text 1. Arjuna inquired, which is considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? So Srila Prabhupada describes two kinds of impersonalists in his Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.35 purport. The impersonalists think of the absolute personality of Godhead in two different ways. On the one hand, they worship the Lord in his Vishwarup, or all-pervading universal form. And on the other, they think of the Lord's unmanifested, undescribable, subtle form. The theories of pantheism and monism are respectively applicable to these two conceptions of the Supreme as gross and subtle. But both of them are rejected by the learned pure devotees of the Lord. Then in his purport to this verse, then Prabhupada mentions, Krishna has now explained about the personal, the impersonal, and the universal, and has described all kinds of devotees and yogis. Generally, the transcendentalists can be divided into two classes. One is the impersonalist, and the other is the personalist. Now, Arjuna is trying to settle the question of which process is easier, and which of the classes is most perfect. In other words, he is clarifying his own position because he is attached to the personal form of Krishna. He is not attached to the impersonal Brahman. He wants to know whether this position is secure. The impersonal manifestation, either in this world or in the spiritual world of the Supreme Lord, is a problem for meditation. Actually, one cannot perfectly conceive of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, Arjuna wants to say, what is the use of such a waste of time? Arjuna experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best, because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time. There was no disturbance in his love for Krishna. This important question asked of Krishna by Arjuna will clarify the distinction between the impersonal and personal conceptions of the Absolute. So many points come up in this. One here is that Prabhupada points out, actually one cannot perfectly conceive of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, which is a fact. The living entity, the jiva, actually cannot understand the Brahman as such, means here, cannot perfectly conceive, because we're different from it. Means we can relate that it exists and we have some understanding of it, but we can't have complete understanding, because we're Sat-Chit-Ananda. Right? So chit means knowledge, ananda means bliss, or relationship, exchange, activity. And the Brahman is only sat, so eternal. So we can relate to the eternal aspect, but because it's missing chit and specifically ananda, actually we can't fully relate to it. Because we're not like that. We're active, we're full of knowledge, and eternal. So just to relate to something that's only eternal, no knowledge, no ananda, we can't factually conceive of it. You know? It just doesn't make full sense, because we're not made like that. And Krishna is Sat-Chit-Ananda, but in unlimited quantity. So actually we can relate more with him. relating with the personal form of the Lord makes more sense for the living entity, because all the same qualities are there in greater amount. But the Brahman realization is not very conceivable to the living entity. You know, it's just like if we just say, oh, what did you do on your vacation? Oh, you had a vacation? Oh, a great vacation. What did you do? I went into the closet and just closed the door. It says, really? How long were you in there? Oh, 3 weeks. It was great. You just say, what? You know, what did you do? This? Oh, nothing. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. You can't relate to it. So the same way is one can't actually relate to the Brahman. It is only, it's one can relate to it a touch more than the material world. That's the difference. The material world is, there's no sat, no chit, and no ananda. So there's nothing to relate to factually for the living entity. So he turns his attention from that, from the material nature, and turns it to Krishna. I mean, turns it to something else. So all he can come up with is the sat feature of the Lord, the impersonal feature of the Lord. So that's better. At least it has some substance. It actually has substance. So they're counted as transcendentalists. But it doesn't have any solid platform for the living entity. The living entity can't stay in this. There's not enough to hold him there. Because he needs chit and ananda. Then he can stay. But that's not found in the Brahman. Right? He thinks it is because he's performing activities here, so he's doing aspects of ananda, though it's still material. And, you know, he's cultivating knowledge, so the chit is there. So in his own mind, he actually thinks he has something complete. He's performing his sadhana, you know, of his impersonal sadhana. And he is engaged in the process of knowledge, like that. So then it seems okay. But when he actually gets there, he finds that the activities have stopped now and the knowledge is not there, it's just Brahman. So after a while, then one falls from there. Right? The only thing that actually keeps him is he's thinking, I am Brahman. So that is some knowledge. So there's a touch more of just knowledge there. And he's thinking, oh, this is so nice compared to the material world. So there's some ananda is there. Seemingly ananda is there. But it's not the Brahman itself. The knowledge is not there. The ananda is not there. So after a while, when he forgets about the material world, the pain in the material world goes, then again he has to think of activity. Right? I think we discussed this before. You know, if you're feeling very, very, you're feeling very hot. You're outside, very hot, very sweaty. Then you come inside, you know, and you have a fan running, something cooling, or a nice air conditioner, or some nice breeze, or something. So for those few minutes that you're going from being hot to not being hot, during those moments while you're becoming cooler, only during that time, then you experience some happiness. You think, this fan, oh, so nice, this breeze. This is the life, you know, sitting under the fan. But as soon as you've actually cooled down, means as long as you can remember the pain you were in being hot, then the fan, the air from the fan is pleasurable. But as soon as you cool down, it's just normal. There's no more pleasure coming from the fan. And immediately then you start to think of what to do. Right? In the beginning, you're just sitting there. Someone says, hey, come do this. No, I'm so happy here. Right? Because, you know, if I leave here, I'll get hot. So I'm here, you know. I'm enjoying the cooling process. But as soon as we're cool, then we're going to look for something to do. Right? Isn't that? In the modern world, everyone who thinks they're cool, then they do something. So that's the whole thing, is that while we are experiencing the change from pain to that pain going away, we call that pleasure. So pleasure is the removal of pain. We call that happiness, but it's not actual happiness. Right? So then what is called Brahmananda just means transference from the material, all the material pain going away. Right? Material pleasure we call when we're getting rid of one pain. You know, we get rid of one pain at a time. I'm hungry. I'm eating. That pain is going away. I'm very tired. I get an opportunity to lay down and sleep. You know, or you know, something, whatever it may be. That pain that is there, then is going away. You know, so generally one at a time. But when all the material pains all at once are going away, that's called Brahmananda. So during the time that the pain is going away, then you're very happy, right? And it says you'd be there for millions of years, billions or whatever it is. But one has to remember that 151 trillion years is 3/4 of a second in spiritual time. So it's just like the, what do you call it? The heavenly planets. 10,000 years you'll enjoy, but that's our time. To the demigods, it's only 100 years. So the enjoying in the Brahmananda for so long, millions and billions of years, but still, that is only material. I mean, that is only a short time. It's only a short time. It's not that long. Because when you're talking about eternity, unless you're there for eternity, it's not a long time. So one also has to remember that aspect. Because when we say millions of years, there is no years in the Brahman. So when we say millions of years, we can only compare it to here. Right? It doesn't say millions of lifetimes of Brahma or millions of, you know, like that. No, it says millions of years. Right? Like that. So that is how it's... One has to see this point. These are the flowery words of the Vedas. This is what Krishna is saying we should give up in the second chapter. You forgetting, it's so nice not being in the material world anymore. Then during the time that you're happy with that, that's called Brahmananda. But it's the Brahman doesn't actually have any ananda. It's just called that, just so the people, you know, will look in that direction, as opposed to just becoming sinful rascals. So it's not actually, there is no ananda. Just like in the material world there's no ananda, the Brahman has no ananda, because it's only sat. Where's the ananda? It's not there. Just by definition of what it is, there's no ananda. Right? Sat doesn't contain ananda. So for the soul to go there means sat chit ananda. There must be ananda. Otherwise, if you don't have ananda, how do you experience ananda? The table doesn't experience any ananda. You know, table's looking old and that, you bring out some sandpaper and sand it down, you know, it's nothing, oh, so nice, and then you varnish it with some nice varnish, it's nothing, oh, this is great. No, there's no ananda there, because it doesn't contain any. So just the concept that you would experience ananda in the Brahman, or that you're looking for ananda, means the soul has ananda. So the impersonalists aren't that intelligent to put that together, that to experience ananda, you have to have ananda as part of you. Otherwise, how do you experience it? Right? Unless it's there, the element is there, it can't be experienced. Right? The material nature doesn't experience life because there's no life there. But the soul experiences because he is life. So the Brahmananda, you cannot experience any happiness, just by definition. Just by looking at the elements, in a very simple thing. They do neti, 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 like anything in the material world, but they don't carry on with that and look in the spiritual world. Otherwise, they would understand, I'm different from it. All they know is I'm Brahman. They just have understood the sat aspect of themselves and the sat aspect of Krishna, the Brahman. But if they understood the chit, then chit is there. They would have to look for that. You know, and then ananda, then they would have to look for the ananda. So like this. So it can't be fully conceived, it's probably mentioned here. So because one can't, then Arjuna wants to say, what is the use of such a wasted time? He wants to make that point here. Then this other point that comes is that Arjuna experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time and there was no disturbance to his love for Krishna. This we discussed yesterday. If you know Krishna, then everything that's expanding from Krishna, you can know that without disturbing your love for Krishna. See, this is a very important point that's made here. Otherwise, then many will think, if I look at anything other than Braja Krishna, it will disturb my love for Krishna. That's only because we see it different. But if we understand it all comes from Krishna, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, everything's coming from Krishna, then it's all part of Him. Just as it only has some partial manifestation. You know? It's just a fragment of a portion of my... I pervade this whole world. So that means the super soul is already a fragment, and then a portion of him is going, or the other way around, whichever. So one can understand that all this is Krishna, and then it doesn't disturb his love for Krishna to see these things. But if one is on a platform where he doesn't see that ultimate form of Krishna, then he may become disturbed. So this that way it doesn't disturb. That is two things here. Then another point of here is the theories of pantheism and monism. So he says here, what is it? Explained about the personal, the impersonal, and the universal. So the impersonal is the monism, the actual Brahmavad. And the universal form is pantheism, where we see God and nature. That is generally the lowest level of consciousness, like that. That is explained. It's one who sees in nature. So this basically includes, except for the Brahmavadis, it includes practically, it includes the Mayaya Pratijnanas, includes the Mayavadis. They're not actually on that elevated of a platform, because they don't see transcendental. The Lord's form, they think, is material. So they only know the material nature. They don't actually know Brahman. They talk about it, but they don't actually know it. So they're not actually transcendentalists. They just try to look like it. But they all just see nature, material nature. That's all they see. So this is just various degrees of pantheism. You know, from your very unsophisticated, aboriginal person who, a great mountain or, a lightning bolt or a monstrous pebble in the middle of a desert, all this becomes God, right? We have in Australia, there's a huge rock. It means it's a rock, like a pebble, monstrous thing. I don't know how big it is, a few hundred feet across or something like that. And it's just sitting out in the sand. So, everybody's seen a pebble, but no one's seen a pebble that's hundreds of feet across, especially if you're only, a few feet high and, you live out in the desert, that's all you got. Then it's like very amazing. So then, this is a manifestation of God for them. They'll worship the Lord in this. And up to where you see the universal form and understand so many how all the energies are working in the material world, but you don't see beyond it, the personal form. Then one is actually still just it's still pantheism. But it's just, you just have a more sophisticated understanding, like that. Because Krishna says, anything great, splendorous, beautiful, like that. So here's a great pebble, or a great lightning bolt, or, some other great feature. And so that is Krishna. But you only know that much of it. But then the worshipper of the Vishwarup may know more. He may know so many. Here Krishna, he related 82 in the 10th chapter and then so many more in the 11th chapter. So like that, you put it all together and you may end up with so many understandings. But you still see it as all as impersonal. So that can also explain why it says that the Mayavadis are offenders, Because they talk about Brahman, but when they see Krishna's form, they say it's material. So they're actually, you know, on this pantheism. While the Brahmavadis are actual monists. They're not offensive. They're just less fortunate, less intelligent. Then Krishna then replies to this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect." So here he makes the point that, Prabhupada makes this point here. Sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, or sometimes he cooks prasadam or goes to the market to purchase something for Krishna, or sometimes he washes the temple or the dishes. Whatever he does not let a single moment pass without devoting his activities to Krishna. Such action is in full samadhi. So this is activities in Krishna consciousness. Like this. So this Krishna considers to be the most perfect of the two, three and four. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchangeable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. Yeah, but here it means only his effulgence, the Brahmajyoti. They eventually achieve, but only the Brahmajyoti. But if they meet an advanced devotee, then they can take up Krishna consciousness. His Brahmavadis are very rare, actual Brahmavadis. And they're not at all inimical to Krishna consciousness. They just don't know about it. So if they are fortunate and they meet a pure devotee, they'll take up devotional service. They won't reject. Because on what is the doubt? They already accepted Brahman. They've given up all doubt. So when they come in, when they are on the Brahman platform, and then they come in contact with Sat and Chit, right? Why they won't take it? Like that. They can distinguish between matter and spirit. So when they see spirit coming along, and there's more definition of spirit, they'll take it. That's all. Five. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Jan Prabhu points out here. Impersonalists may read this verse and respond, "Because Krishna has certified the path of renunciation and meditation as troublesome, I will engage in devotional service to Krishna, though I know that his form is temporary. Thus I will soon achieve Brahman. Krishna, however, has already nullified the validity of bhakti practiced in this fashion in Bhagavatam 9.11.12. Abhijananti mam mudha manushim tanumasritam param bhava majanat Ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. Mogasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated." So anyone who thinks Krishna's form is temporary, they're defeated. Like that. True Brahmavadis think they're Brahman, and Krishna is also Brahman. They just don't understand the Chit and Ananda aspects. But they don't think that Krishna is impersonal. I mean, they don't think that he is material. He is also Brahman. Like that. Therefore, they can get to the Brahman platform. But those who think his body is material, the mode of goodness, they never get anything. They don't get liberation. They don't, whatever they're trying for, they don't get. Nobody gets. Even if they're fruit of workers, if they think Krishna's form is material, they won't get. They'll all suffer. 6 and 7. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pritha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So Prabhupada expresses this. For one who has the faith that Krishna will take care of them. The purport of this verse is that a devotee does not need to practice Astanga Yoga in order to transfer his soul to the spiritual planets. The responsibility is taken by the Supreme Lord himself. He clearly states here that he himself becomes the deliverer. A child is completely cared for by his parents, and thus his position is secure. Similarly, a devotee does not need to endeavor to transfer himself by yoga practice to other planets. Rather, the Supreme Lord, by his great mercy, comes at once, riding on his bird carrier, Garuda, and at once delivers the devotee from material existence. Although a man who has fallen into the ocean may struggle very hard and may be very expert in swimming, he cannot save himself. But if someone comes and picks him up from the water, then he is easily rescued. Similarly, the Lord picks up the devotee from the material existence. One simply has to practice the easy process of Krishna consciousness and fully engage himself in devotional service. So here Krishna will pick him up, because the devotee is not even wanting liberation. He just wants to serve. So because such a mentality, then Krishna is very, very pleased. Krishna is very, very happy with such a devotee. He's very happy. Lord Chaitanya prays, Mama janmani janmani shware bhavatad bhakti rahituki tai. That all I want is birth, your devotional service, birth after birth. Doesn't matter. If I can serve Krishna and be happy, birth after birth doesn't matter. Because we only find here a difficulty because of we're not remembering Krishna. So many anxieties are there, so many things bother us. Otherwise, difficulties aren't the problem. It's being bothered by the difficulties, right? If you're really happy, something that we would consider is really what we want happens, we don't notice the material difficulties. You know? We don't notice like that. Others may notice, you don't notice, because you're happy. So it's not the difficulties that are the difficulty. The difficulty is being affected by them. If we're Krishna conscious, then we're not affected by them. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya is saying, it doesn't matter. Even birth after birth doesn't matter. Because if I'm conscious of you, then what's the problem? It doesn't really matter where we are. So now, in these next verses, then Krishna starts to talk about this different levels of achievement, how to come to the perfectional platform, how to advance. 8. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. Then 9, my dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to give up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. So here is where Krishna is recommending that one just completely fix oneself on Krishna. absorb oneself in Krishna, engage all one's intelligence in me, then one will always be living within Krishna. So this is the devotional process. This is the perfection. This is what we're trying to achieve. But we're always thinking of Krishna, always absorbed in Krishna. But then if that is a difficulty, then he mentions here that if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, so it means if you can't act on this topmost platform, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. No, it comes later. Ah, no, here it is. So Prabhupada mentions here about the process of sadhana. Practice of sadhana that elevate one to the stage of attainment of Krishna. To practice the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, one should, under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, follow certain principles. One should rise early in the morning, take bath, enter the temple, and offer prayers and chant Hare Krishna. Then collect flowers to offer to the deity. Cook foodstuffs to offer to the deity. Take prasadam, and so on. There are various rules and regulations which one should follow. And one should constantly hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees. This practice can help anyone rise to the level of love of God, and then he is sure of his progress into the spiritual kingdom of God. Then Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, quotes a verse from the Padma Purana. Smartavya satatam vishnor vismartavyo najatu chit sarve vidhi nishedha syur etayor eva kinkara. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never be forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be the servants of these two principles. So here Krishna has asked us, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles. So the purpose of the regulative principles are to always remember Krishna and never forget. So that's why they're there. And if we understand that, then we actually get some good benefit out of them. Anyway, if we do what is instructed by the spiritual master, then it works nicely. But as we understand what they're for, we understand this is always just for remembering Krishna. We go to Mangalarti, first thing in the day we see Krishna. We chant our rounds, we're remembering Krishna. Then we're hearing Bhagavatam, that's Krishna. We're taking prasad, that's Krishna. We're doing some service, that's to remember Krishna. So in all our activities, it is there to remember Krishna. That's what it's for. And things that it says don't do, that is because by doing those, the conditioned soul is going to forget Krishna. Because of his attachments to the material body, mind, intelligence, then he will forget. If you do these things, one will forget. Therefore, they are there, so you won't forget Krishna. Because the whole idea of sadhana bhakti is bringing you to this platform of always fixing your mind on Krishna with determination. Then it becomes very nice. Understanding that, then things work nicely. And one avoids the difficulty of niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means this: we don't follow the rules because we don't know why they're there. We don't understand that they're there to remember Krishna and to not forget. Or we are so much into the rules and regulations just because it's a rule and regulation. We're very attached to the karma side of the rules. Just they must be done. It's pious, it's proper. Right? Piety should be performed, impiety should be avoided. So following rules and regulations is pious. Therefore it must be done. Right? It must be done. Then we see that this is not satisfying to Krishna because we're not remembering Krishna. So the purpose of all the rules and regulations are to remember Krishna. That is why sadhana bhakti is there. That is what is given to us. Now, then Krishna gives other processes. You cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. So this is the platform of Bhujan Prabhu points out here, this is the platform of karma yoga, working for Krishna. Now, in here is, you do work for Krishna. Because one is here specifically saying, if one cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga. But and Prabhupada mentions here. If one has sufficient money, he can help in building an office or temple for propagating Krishna consciousness. Or he can help with publications. There are various fields of activity, and one should be interested in such activities. If one cannot sacrifice the results of his activities, the same person can still sacrifice some percentage to propagate Krishna consciousness. His voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness will help one to rise to a higher state of love for God, whereupon one becomes perfect. Srila Prabhupada has thus described both Nishkam Karma and Sakam Karma. Here, it's Bhurijan Prabhu's note. So we see that the aspect is someone who can't render so much devotional service and take up the sadhana. They can come sometimes to the temple, do some service, they can give, you know, take some project, give some money, do something like this. That they can do. So that aspect is there. Also the aspect, if one cannot be fully absorbed in the sadhana, right? One needs to engage, very much deal with the conditioned nature. Then here, that work is done for Krishna. So it can have basically both these kind of meanings. And then giving for Krishna means you can't give, really do much work or give much money, but something you're giving because of the attachment. So this is then the sakam. Nishkam means you can just do the work just for Krishna. You know, come and do some voluntary work, some other activity. Or it can just mean for the devotee who just absorbing themselves in the sadhana doesn't keep them fully busy. So then they take help of engaging the conditioned nature. And then this also is purifying. So this point is one's working for Krishna. Then he mentions, if however you are unable to work in this consciousness for me, then try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. So here Prabhupada writes here, it may be that one is unable even to sympathize with the activities of Krishna consciousness because of social, familiar, or religious considerations, or because of some other impediments. For one who has such a problem, it is advised that he sacrifice the accumulated result of his activities to some good cause. Such procedures are described in the Vedic rules. Thus one may gradually become elevated to the state of knowledge. It is also found that when one who is not even interested in the activities of Krishna consciousness gives charity to some hospital or to some other social institution, he gives up the hard-earned results of his activities. That is also recommended here, because by the practice of giving up the fruits of one's activities, one is sure to purify his mind gradually, and in that purified stage of mind, one becomes able to understand Krishna consciousness. So here, someone can't either relate to Krishna consciousness, okay, it's a nice thing, they give some money, like that, or they can't practice because of social or family or different obligations. So if they just give something, even if it's not to Krishna consciousness, just something proper in charity somewhere, just that giving up the results of their work, then brings about purification, and that gives knowledge. And then from that, then one can progress from that knowledge to actually taking up the devotional activities. So these things are mentioned here. As we see in the next point, then it's pointed out here. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. So it's here, it's even putting the jnana and the meditation. That is, either one can look at it that you can take by giving up the fruits of the activity, even if it's material, then one can cultivate knowledge, because from that one gains knowledge. Then from that we can come to meditation, and then renunciation of the fruits of action. Or you can take it that these are even lower than that, because you're cultivating knowledge but you don't know Krishna, so what's the use? The other one at least gives, it purifies you. Well, if you cultivate knowledge and it's not in connection with the Lord, with Krishna, I mean, what's the use of that knowledge at all? I mean, practically giving in charity and it's not for a Krishna conscious purpose, doesn't give any spiritual result. It's practically useless. But it does give some knowledge and some relief from sin. So it makes it more favorable to act in Krishna consciousness, or take up Krishna consciousness if one is sincere and comes in contact. But here, then, if you can't do that, you're studying knowledge, which Krishna has already rejected, even in connection with Krishna consciousness. That just starting from the platform of cultivating knowledge without performing activities, in other words, giving up work, sacrificing, just giving up the work, then he doesn't recommend. Because unless one has been very purified, then there's nothing to purify you. So it doesn't even have a platform. You can cultivate the knowledge, but there's no platform to purify you from, with. So giving in charity at least does that. But this cultivation of knowledge won't even do that for you. So unless you're really situated there, unless you're very pure, then it won't get you, give you much results. There's no connection to Krishna. There's no system to purify you. So there's not much benefit in it. So he says, better than that is meditation.
What kind of knowledge?
Huh?
What kind of knowledge is it from?
He's just saying, these are just talking about here, Brahmagyan, knowledge of the soul. Like that. So you can look at it, it's either going down, just going down, or it's gone down and then it's showing, going from down where you're not even working for Krishna, not doing anything for Krishna, then progressing back up through the whole yoga system, the system of sacrifice again. Does that make some sense? So then, in that way, you could look at it from this Brahmagyan. Yeah, so then Burijan here puts this together that thus these verses describe a sequence. Text 8, you know, saying to always absorb yourself in Krishna with determination, is the perfected devotional service, always remembering Krishna. Then text 9 says if you can't do that, then perform sadhana bhakti and engage in activities that fix the mind directly on Krishna. In other words, devotional practice is typical of temple life. Then text 10 and 12, then karma yoga, working with detachment and offering Krishna the fruit of one's work, either in nishkan karma yoga or sakam karma yoga. This awards one actual peace, bhakti, as described in the peace formula. Two other stages which are lower than karma yoga are also mentioned in 12, meditating and cultivating knowledge, brahmagyan. Still lower than brahmagyan and without a direct transcendental result is the method mentioned in 11. Detached work while offering the fruit not to Krishna, but to a mundane cause. Krishna has already explained in chapter 5 that by working in a detached fashion, one attains Brahmagyan. So even the materialist, he gives in charity and or does his work without attachment because he's, you know, heard that you should, he'll get Brahmagyan. But it doesn't mean he'll become a devotee or in any way move in that way. So Krishna's point is whether you do prescribed duties for him or not, if you do it in a detached fashion, you will get knowledge from it. That will be purification. So if you do it, but it's slow, it's a very slow process, it's the indirect process, and also it will be very difficult because there's nothing to really fix your mind on. You're just doing it because you should do it. But what's to fix your mind that you should do it, other than just the Shastra said? So one would have to have some, you know, some, how do you say, some already some piety to just consider that the Shastra say it, you'll follow it. You know, like the Smartas or something. They're pious, but Krishna is mentioning the path of bhakti means you're going to perform those activities for him. Then with that goal, then you'll progress through it very quickly. You know? So it's just like if I say, if you want to cut up a vegetable, you use a knife. So whether you're doing it without thinking of Krishna, not for Krishna, you're just a karmi, it'll work. The vegetable will get cut. If you're a devotee, it'll also get cut. So it's just a mechanical process. It works. In the material world, if you do an activity without desire for result, you get knowledge. Because then it comes to the platform of goodness. Goodness gives knowledge. Like that. One can get that Brahma Gyan. One can understand that. But one can't get Krishna. One doesn't get Krishna by this Gyan. It just happens. It's a mechanical process. And if you perform activities, prescribed duties, with attached to results, then that's passion. It'll give you some happiness in the beginning, some pain at the end. Right? And if you ignore these and you perform activities in ignorance, then it just gives trouble right from the beginning. So it's just the way the material nature works. So the devotee, because of our conditioning, we take advantage of these mechanisms of the material world, which are meant for elevating the devotees, but it also keeps the materialists busy. And we use the same processes for very quickly going back to Godhead. Does that make any sense? So here then it's because it's concluding in 12, it says that meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. So that brings us again to the karma yoga. So it's kind of, you know, it's taking it from both ways. That means for the devotee is surrendered to Krishna, but he can't surrender fully in this way. You know, just completely. So he surrenders to sadhana. If that's a difficulty, he surrenders to performing prescribed duties. Like that. Then, if we're just talking about non-devotees, or someone who's not interested, then the best is that they give results in charity. But if they don't, either they don't have or they can't relate to that, they don't think that that is actually some sacrifice, then they should cultivate knowledge. By that they'll come to meditation, by that then they may take up some activity and then be able to, you know, do so in a renounced fashion. But otherwise, so then here, Prabhupada mentions here in the purport. In summary, to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is the gradual development, and the other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method, and the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities, the stage of text 11. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, then to the stage of understanding the Supersoul, then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One may take either the step-by-step process or the direct path. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. It is, however, to be understood that the indirect process is not recommended for Arjuna, because he is already at the stage of loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is for others who are not at this stage. For them, the gradual process of renunciation, knowledge, meditation, and realization of the Supersoul and Brahman should be followed. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take to the direct method and surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what's being described is that everyone should try to fully surrender to Krishna. That is what everyone should try to do. But if that's not possible, then the step-by-step method is recommended. Both these are here. Like that. Does that make some sense? Then text 13 and 14. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in all, both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed in me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Baladeva Vidyabhushan makes a comment on this, where he says, on the term Advaishta, or non-envious. He says this is exemplified when a devotee thinks in terms of his enemy. As Srila Baladeva Vibhushan says, "This person hates me, and that is because of my own prarabdha karma, matured reaction of karma. As Krishna is the ultimate controller, this hatred must have Krishna's sanction." So one is not even disturbed by those who feel themselves as one's enemy, because one understands that's just the fruit of my previous reactions, and Krishna being the supreme controller, it's been sanctioned because I have done something to deserve it. So it's happened. This is what's there. So one is not disturbed. Then 15. "He for whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspiciousness and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very, very dear to me." Srila Prabhupada writes, "We may find some repetition in the descriptions of the qualifications of a devotee, but this is just to emphasize the fact that a devotee must acquire all these qualifications. Without good qualifications, one cannot be a pure devotee. Harav abhaktasya kuto mahadguna. One who is not a devotee has no good qualification. One who wants to be recognized as a devotee should develop the good qualifications. Of course, he does not extraneously endeavor to acquire these qualifications. But engagement in Krishna consciousness and devotional service automatically helps him develop them." So all these points are here that this is opening for the last, where Krishna says here, "Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So he's mentioned these 5 different examples. He says all of these are dear to me. But then Prabhupada has pointed out here that one should develop all these qualities. There's repetition so that we develop all these qualities. Like that's what Krishna is saying here. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions this point here, same. "These characteristics that arise in one from devotion and from peacefulness are not material qualities. This is in accordance with the statement, Krishna is satisfied only by devotion, never by material qualities. The word but, too, in this verse indicates the introduction of a new idea. The devotees described up to this point have each perfectly cultivated one aspect of their personalities. Those mentioned in this verse, however, are desires of perfecting all of these qualities. Therefore, even during the stage of sadhana, they are superior to those on other paths, even if those individuals have achieved the perfected stage of their paths. For this reason, the word ativa, extremely, or very, very, is used in this verse." Srila Prabhupada summarizes this chapter. "In this chapter, from verse 2 through the end, the Supreme Lord has explained the processes of transcendental service for approaching Him. Such processes are very dear to the Lord, and He accepts a person engaged in them. The question of who is better, one who is engaged in the path of impersonal Brahman, or one who is engaged in the personal service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was raised by Arjuna. And the Lord replied to him so explicitly that there is no doubt that devotional service to the Personality of Godhead is the best of all processes of spiritual realization." Yeah. So here, Vishwanath is pointing out here the reason Prabhupada's making this point. Prabhupada's saying that devotees should be desirous to develop all these qualities. And Vishwanath points out that all these that are mentioned these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different things are actually devotees concentrating on different areas or taking up different kinds of development, like that. If we study these, one can see that. So the point is that you have all these different paths to get to Krishna, but the path of devotional service is the best. So if one performs his activities under the direction of the spiritual master with the desire to attain Krishna, to please Krishna, then that becomes devotional service. Because what is in connection with Sat becomes Sat. What is in connection with the Eternal or the Supreme Lord becomes that. So all these processes, karma, jnana, yoga, then when they are connected with devotional service, they become devotional service and they elevate us. Like that. So best is to just take up the devotional path straight. But if that's not possible, then going through these various stages with the purpose of attaining pure unalloyed devotional service, then is the powerful process. But one should understand that all these qualities, these are what we're trying to get to. Otherwise, the tendency is we will concentrate just on our own position only and forget that there is beyond that, above that. Right? Does this make any sense? Is there any questions? Doesn't make any sense.
What this means, concentrating our position only?
Okay. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed in me, such a devotee of mine is very dear. So we see that all these qualities go together. This is one mentality. Right? Because Krishna finishes it and says, this is very dear to me. Someone who can do this is very dear. Not envious, kind friend, does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego. Who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination. His mind and intelligence fixed in me. Right? Then we have this one. He for whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. See, the other one is kind of more active. The mentality is going out more. But in this one you see, they're not putting anyone else in distress, they're not bothered by anybody else. You see? It's a slight different mentality. Who's equipoise, happiness, distress. They're just kind of like going along as it's happening. They're not really so active. Just, they're not bothering anyone, they're not bothered by anyone. And they're not bothered by anything. Right? So it's actually, it's a path. Well, this other is that one is here is much more active. He's not envious, he's a friend, means he's out. He's moving with people, dealing with people, interface. This other one doesn't really deal. They don't bother anybody. They're not bothered by anybody. They just kind of like move through the world. Then you have my devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result is very dear. Not dependent on the ordinary course. We get used to things just going ordinary. When it goes out of the ordinary, we can't function. So this person is not dependent upon that. Very dynamic, right here. Who is pure, expert, without cares, means they'll just push on, doesn't care what goes on, what happens. They're just going to serve. Free from all pains, nothing bothers them, right? Not striving for some result, they're just doing their service. Like that, it's very dear. Then one who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious, so that such a devotee is very dear. So they're concentrating on this. Just they're not happy, they're not disturbed. It's just like that. They're just not being disturbed by the dualities. They're watching that. But here it's rejoicing, grieving, lamenting or desiring. It's basically so they're in that in that kind of realm of they have the things, but they're not happy by them, they're not distressed by them, they're not worried about auspicious or inauspicious, because these all are dealing with these. Yeah. Then the next one, one who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equal poise in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service. Such a person is very dear. So the person is very detached. They don't keep anything. People like them, don't like them. Anything like this. It's also, you can see, there's much great similarity between all of them. Prabhupada says, therefore there's repetition. But you see the flavor of each one slightly different. The flavor is different. So devotees may take these different mentalities. They're very dear to Krishna. The Prabhupada is saying, recommending that we should try to be developing all these. And such a person, then Krishna says, those persons are very, very dear. Because these are dear. These are very, very dear. Right? He makes that point there. So that's Vishwanath saying, is that introduction to a new idea. It means up to now he's described devotees who take this part and get into this part and get into this. But he's now talking about is the one who can take the whole thing. He's the most dear. Like that. So that is what's being made by this point. Yes.
Alright, is the like implication that one is only really able to do that by identity, Krishna consciousness?
Yes, of course. Because in all of these are all devotees. These aren't now talking about just the yoga ladder. This is talking about devotees. But basically, kind of, it appears that there are various situations within that. You know, it's like the first one who is not envious but a kind friend to all living, who does not think himself a proprietor. It means he has stuff to think himself the proprietor of. Right? Who is free from false ego, so he's doing activities he could be very proud of. Who is equal in both happiness and distress. Who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engage in devotional service with determination. So this one would bring out the aspect of its nishkam karma, but it also could be very much within the realm of like grihastha or, you know, something like that. So one here, my devotee was not dependent on the ordinary course. This would be management like that, some kind of, you know, organizing things that would, you're not dependent upon the course of activities that someone else has chalked out. You yourself are establishing it. You know, need be for others and things like that. This last one is one who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equal poise and honor, dishonor, heat, cold, happiness, distress, fame, infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service, and gives it the renounced order, the detached, like that. So it's various aspects within. You know, so you can see these kind of aspects there. I mean, each one can apply in so many ways, but it's kind of like it gives a flavor in this way. But he's saying here is that one who follows this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear. Like that. So it's someone who's working with all these qualities. Does that make any sense?
It's interesting that in the first half of this chapter, Krishna is talking about different levels of activity of Krishna consciousness, and he is saying very clearly what is good, better, best. But it's when he's talking attitudes that he's talking about what's dear to him.
Yeah.
There seems to be a strong resonance there.
Yeah. Yeah, because Krishna then mentions that the jnani he considers to be like himself because of the quality of his work. You know, the quality of his work. And then someone who's come to the perfectional platform, he considers them, you know, even greater basically than himself. But those who are working in this attitude as mentioned here, he considers them equal to himself because they are working on the platform of detached work. They are Brahman, and he is. So then the equality is there, though we're small and he's great. But then when one goes beyond the devotion, then comes the reciprocation, the rasa. So these aspects are the more important of what's going on. In other words, the external is the form through which you're going to perform the activities, but how you perform that, that's more important. That's what makes it. So I think, is that the point you're making? Is that the attitude in which it's done is more important than what's being done? Because that's what Krishna says when he comes, when he descends. He comes to actually associate with the devotees. Because the devotees want to see him, associate with him. So he comes actually for that. In the process, he establishes Dharma and removes all the demons. But that's just a side thing. But the main thing is he comes to associate with the devotees. So that's most dear to him. So that association is there. Is that where you want to go?
So these qualities we should... They are developed for the matter, or we should also endeavor to...
Well, he says, the Prabhupada says here, of course he does not... One who wants to be recognized as a devotee should develop the good qualities. Of course, he does not extraneously endeavor to acquire these qualifications, but engagement in Krishna consciousness and devotional service automatically helps him develop them. In other words, one is conscious of them, but one doesn't try to, outside Krishna consciousness, try to gain them. By performing a Krishna consciousness, these things are going to happen. You know, summertime will come, wintertime will come, happiness comes, distress comes. People dealing nicely with us, not dealing nicely with us, come. So in this, if we're aware that these qualities are important, when they come up, that choice is there to how to act, how not to act. You know? So it's, we're aware of it. In this way, we're endeavoring for them, by wanting them, by desiring them. And when the opportunity comes, trying to take that. And if not, then trying to analyze what we should have done to actually improve that quality. So it's not separately endeavored for. You know, it's not that we go out, you know, go out and stand in the middle of the road or something and then try not to bother anybody. You know, it's like, it's not service. So in line with our service, we do. These the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, separate from devotional service, they try to gain these qualities. But these devotees, these qualities naturally come in devotional service because these are the qualities of a devotee. So as we're being purified, we allow these qualities actually to manifest. We take advantage of the opportunities to apply them. You know, something comes up. Now we do something. Then we can either think, yes, I did that, or we can think, I didn't do that. By Krishna's arrangement, by mercy of the Guru, Vaishnavas, then it becomes very, very nice. So we have that opportunity. Otherwise, if we think, I did it, then next time the opportunity comes around or something, then we'll get trouble for that. And we can't figure out why. And then we think everybody's giving us trouble. And we're doing everything nice, seemingly we're getting a good result, materially. But we don't understand it's because I am claiming the result or the ability. Because of ego, then Krishna is putting pressure to break that ego. And if we don't, if we're very stubborn and hold on, then Krishna will keep pushing to the point where we just get basically crushed. You know? Devotees won't be satisfied. They'll say, you know, we don't like this person, or other authorities will say, and one will find that that position that one had, that one thought one was controlling and doing everything very wonderfully, we may lose. And then still we have the choice now to understand, oh, Krishna has some hand here. Or we can just think these devotees made politics, like that, like here, like Baladev says. This person hates me, and that is because of my own prarabdha karma, the matured reaction of karma. As Krishna is the ultimate controller, this person's hatred must have Krishna's sanction. Right? So that means if it has his sanction, there's a purpose behind it. Either to teach me these quality, bring these out, or I already have that quality, Krishna is showing others through this. You know, like Duryodhana hated the Pandavas. Right? But it's not for the Pandavas' purification, because they're proud and all this. No, this is to show others how they should deal in this situation. But unless we're very confident of our position, like the Pandavas, then we might look at it that this is just our previous karma and I'm being purified. So I must have some anartha in the heart that I can create this kind of hatred in somebody. Even though maybe I didn't do anything now, but I've done it in the past, therefore I've gotten this reaction that's coming to me now. Like that. But if I think this person hates me and this is unjust, this, that, then I'm just seeing material nature. I'm seeing the modes of material nature and I'm taking that seriously. I'm not seeing Krishna's hand behind it. Therefore, because that, the purification is not there. It's not a complete path. Well, I see the hatred. I don't say the person doesn't hate me. And I'm not saying that we are not, you know, how you say, qualified to be, you know, hateable. But, and I'm not even saying that there's no reason for it. It's my karma. So that means, karma means I've done something in the past to deserve it. And I see Krishna is the supreme controller, so it's sanctioned. I see it in connection with Krishna, now I'm not bothered by it. Then I stay equipoised. Then I'm purified, and these qualities deepen more. But if I don't see Krishna, I remove Krishna from it, then I don't see this as karma. I'll see karma, but I'm thinking, just think of the karma this other person's going to get. I was just perfectly running everything, and now they've done all this to me, all this politics and all this and that. You know, just what are they going to get? But I don't see Krishna, that means it's from previous, it's sanctioned. So I'm not purified. And then the next stage, if I think like this, very easily is I become bitter. Because it's everybody else's fault. So then, therefore, for me to, you know, seriously take up Krishna consciousness, therefore, you know, the whole, basically, you know, I mean, ideally the whole universe, but at least this planet, and at least not if that, then at least all the members of ISKCON, if not that, at least all the senior members of ISKCON. And if not, at least that one person who did all these things to me. They have to change. Then I can, you know, consider taking up devotional service again. But as long as they're in the movement, you know, I'm not having anything to do with it. You know, when they bloop, then I'll consider. Like that. But this is because we're not actually connecting to Krishna, so we don't develop the qualities. But if we connect it to Krishna, we see in all these cases, then that aspect is there. But, you know, the whole point is that these are qualities that are, but even someone who is, yeah, who has these qualities, but the more they connect it to Krishna, that's when they become dear. Says, engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal. Because in this, like that, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. But they may not have been fully absorbed in Krishna as the ultimate goal. So that's why they're dear. But the one who sees Krishna as supreme is very, very dear. Because that connection then makes all perfection. And without that connection, then it's not as perfect. but they're devotees, right?
He's obviously done something to cause other devotees to become initial.
Yeah, so then he's not in this category here. He'll be in another one.
But he's thinking anyway, it's Krishna's.
Yeah.
So he's indifferent. But what about from the other devotee's point of view? Shouldn't he be thinking, because of me, I'm disturbing this devotee?
Yeah. Then you could go to that devotee and say, you know, I'm sorry if I've disturbed you, this and that, and then they also become Krishna conscious. Right?
Otherwise
you may become a callous. Yeah. No, the callousness can't be there because you know I deserve it, so therefore I become humble, and this is a display of Krishna's chastisement. Like that. If you just become callous, that means you don't see Krishna as a sanctioning, you don't see it as your karma. Okay. Yes?
Maharaj Prabhupada says in the Gita that Stita Dira Muni, he sees, not only am I responsible, not only do I deserve this, and not only is it sanctioned by the Lord, but I believe that the Lord is somehow minimized. He's so kind that even I should be getting a big reaction, he's minimized to what it is now. It's being less and diminished by the mercy of the Lord. So I deserve it, but he's so kind upon me that he's made it much less than in the ordinary mechanical course of the things it should have been.
Yeah, very good point. Yes. I got booted out as temple president in only one temple. I should have been booted out in hundreds, but Krishna has reduced it down to just one temple. That's a good, very good point. Yes, ma'am.
Isn't it also that sometimes the karmic element is the secondary element, and the main element is that Krishna wants, he can see we're sincere, he wants something, or there are not of this, and he wants to teach us. So he has Krishna within the heart of every living entity. So if he wants, he can make the whole world have this. He just has to tell everybody, hate that person. Or if he wants everybody to glorify, he can do that too. So if we can, you know, like it seems to me that we can wake up to full dependence on Krishna by realizing that. He can do anything in his whim. Everything can be going, you know, he can be doing everything right. But if he decides everybody's going to hate you, they're going to hate you.
No, it's a very good point. But generally you'll see is that Krishna himself doesn't get involved in the modes.
But as the Paramatma.
Yeah. So the point is that he will sanction and the modes will carry out. So the modes will only carry out action and reaction. So the modes will expertly arrange that someone who has this kind of nature will be arranged to come to the place where you are so that you can receive that reaction, and then it will all happen. But generally it won't be that. So when we say no reason, means I'm doing the duty properly, and so there shouldn't be any reason someone should dislike me. But if we look at the karma side of it, this means that previously someone else was doing something perfectly nicely with no need, and I just walked in and gave them trouble. Because the living entity can, by his desire, start a new cycle of karma. It means at any moment you can start something new. Just that you know, you how do you say? Just that you stepped on a bug doesn't mean that, well, in the last life this guy stepped on me, so I got him back. You know? That may be the fact and generally what's going on. But it could be that he was just minding his own business and you stepped on him. Now in next life he has the opportunity to step on you. You can start new. So it's not that everything has already just been worked out, you know, unlimited lifetimes of Brahma ago, and it's just happening. Right? But it's that the general things go on, and you have your little independent choice within the situation. Like that. Even if this is the very bug that stepped on you last life, and now here's your opportunity to get him back, you can decide not to take that opportunity and not step on it. So that cycle that was there stops. Right? And this way the living entity steps out of the wheel of karma. Is that opportunities are there, they're not taken. You know? Like that. Like this, they're given up. That's the meaning of renunciation. Or specifically sannyas. It's just one gives up all those things, the fruits would be there. That's you leave them. You know? You step out of that results. So Krishna's point is that one doesn't do that until one is purified enough. Otherwise, even one steps out, those desires are still there, and it's just a matter of time. One will somehow or another get involved again. So he's recommending that you do activities, purify yourself according to your nature. Then naturally that knowledge of Brahma-jnana will rise in the heart. One will be able to understand oneself, one will be able to understand the Paramatma, one will be able to understand Krishna, the devotion. So that element there is we shouldn't implicate Krishna personally in the workings of the material nature. Though he sanctions it, and it's mentioned Krishna will do many, many things by one activity. He's so expert, he can pull together so many things, get many, many things done at once. That is very, very expert.
Is there a time when these qualities are not so applicable, like when there's demoniac attack or something?
I mean, one is undisturbed when one, you know, picks up a bamboo and whacks the demon over the head. One is detached from the results. You know, whether they go unconscious or, you know, one is not attached. One is performed one's duty. Yeah. No, it means for Krishna's things, then one gets. But that's not material. It's not a material thing. Like that. Because we fixed our mind on Krishna, we don't allow anyone to bother Krishna. Like that. Now you'll see, there are those who, because it's Krishna's, then they're fighting for Krishna. You know, that's the thing. This is Krishna, somebody is bothering it. So then they will not allow that. There's others who are they like to fight and do these things. And so they can engage that in Krishna's service by engaging in such activities. If someone comes and bothers the temple, then they can, you know, they can deal with them. So it's coming from a slightly different, both are service. But one is coming because it's Krishna's either property or Krishna's person, we don't want it. And the other one is that, you know, it's against the rules, you can't do that, and I'm looking for any opportunity possible to engage my martial tendencies. So here's the opportunity. And then one does it for Krishna. It's just the mood is different. So like you pointed out before, that's where the qualities are mentioned. Like that. Because that's what makes the system work. That's what makes it nice. Otherwise, then the yoga ladder is there. That's the activity. So Krishna's pointed that out. Now what's being pointed out is the mentality by which one does these things. Does that make any?
Yeah. I heard that point on what is very, very dear to Krishna. Also implies like somebody like Swarup Damodar, if he read everything that would be presented to Lord Chaitanya, and sometimes there were verses or works that were even very gladly accepted by all the devotees of the Lord. They would think it was very wonderful, and that he would, knowing perfectly the Lord's mentality, the Lord would find disturbing, would point out, no, there's inconsistencies very expert, you see, oh, here's some rasa bhasas.
He mentions here that those mentioned in this verse, however, are desirous of perfecting all these qualities. Therefore, even during the stage of sadhana, they are superior to those on other paths, even if those individuals have achieved the perfected stage of those paths. For this reason, the word ativa, extremely or very, very, is used in this verse.
Read that again.
Hmm?
Read it again.
Okay. This is his whole point. Just read, Vishwanath is commenting. These characteristics that arise in one from devotion and from peacefulness are not material qualities. This is in accordance with the statement, Krishna is satisfied only by devotion, never by material qualities. The word but, too, in this verse indicates the introduction of a new idea. The devotees described up to this point have each perfectly cultivated one aspect of their personalities. Those mentioned in this verse, however, are desirous of perfecting all these qualities. Therefore, even during the stage of sadhana, they are superior to those on other paths, even if those individuals have achieved the perfected stage of their paths. For this reason, the word ativa, extremely or very, very, is used in this verse. In other words, someone is perfecting one aspect of their personality. You know? The one here is very dynamic, the one here is very, you know, reclusive, the one here is very congenial and, you know, unattached. The other one here, you know, doesn't become bothered by good and evil and this and that. The other one is very renounced and not bothered by, you know, facilities or fame, infamy. So the different aspects of the personality. But here he's saying that one who wants to develop all these.
Sir, but there's, now you read that even if somebody performing just sadhana,
yeah,
like one look at, you know, this, then he's superior.
Yeah, but he's superior.
This is a little strange for me because this all other aspect, they also lead to develop.
Yeah. In other words, if you're taking one of these paths and come up, and then you'll expand it when you get to a perfectional, more perfect platform. But here, if while in the process one is trying to imbibe all this, that person is very dear, very, very dear. In other words, someone's just concentrating on one aspect because it's their nature. Right? We can see these are different natures, how someone will think, act like that. But it's you're trying to develop all these aspects. Because Krishna's described in the Gita all these different things that one should do. So trying to develop all these qualities, being aware of all these qualities, that person is very, very dear to Krishna. Otherwise someone's just doing their aspect. And he's dear. Because they're devotees. In other words, someone who's more conscious of the whole process, what's going on while they're going through it, then is more dear. Krishna mentions to Nanda Baba that someone who knows what they're doing, following the ritual, gets more benefit than one who doesn't know. Because he asks Nanda Baba, why you're doing this? And he says, we don't know, we just do it. It's always done it. It's tradition. So then Krishna makes that point. If you know what you're doing, you get more benefit than if you don't know. You get benefit anyway, but you get more benefit if you know. So this point is being made here. As one who understands the whole thing, then he actually gets more benefit. He's more dear to Krishna. All are dear, but he's more dear. And extra very is. The others are all very dear. Says, yeah, he ends each one with very dear. Very dear to me. But here he says, very, very dear. Extra very. You get A plus.
Double dear.
Huh?
Double dear.
Double dear, yes.
Would be categorized like the others who are following a path to achieve something that's more like cities. They want the city. Whereas the other one, he wants devotion to Krishna. And he's accepting this as they come along, everything inclusive. Not specifically trying individually for each one. Because the other devotee is more like a city he's achieving, aspiring for.
Maybe. Yeah, it would be, that aspect would be there. I feel it's just that the absorption in their own personality and developing that, engaging that, may be very strong in this case. So in that way, it's like a siddhi. But here, it's more as you kind of go beyond that. That's going on. Is one is contemplative, one sees one's, as you said, you know, what is one's nature, what is one's anartas, you know, and then tries to purify, engage them, purify them, engage one's nature, purify the anartas. But if one's very absorbed in that aspect, and Krishna is not as, but though a few of them here, well, it says, engage in devotional service with the determination as mind and intelligence fixed in me. So then that's that they're absorbed in this. They are fixed in Krishna. Then in the other ones it doesn't mention that they're so fixed on Krishna. In other words, it's like we've heard so many aspects. You know, it's like not being ego or not being attached to this or being peaceful, no desires, or so many different things are there. So we naturally fix on something. In other words, the devotee who's fixing on one of these things and then developing that, then that's, Krishna's happy with that because that's his instructions. But those who can basically kind of like understand the whole picture and then engage with that, that person is very, very dear. You know, it's just like in, let's say cooking. You know, someone just concentrates on sabji, someone on sweets, someone on fried things, someone on this and that. But that, so they're all, you'd call them all good cooks, right? But that person who can cook all those things, you know, equally, and he can deal in any of these areas, then you would say is, you know, his basis is more broad. Like that.
What would you say is the essential quality to develop this point?
Means this last point.
No, but you're talking about over all of them, so what would you say is the essential quality to develop? Yeah.
The problem was we would have to go back to the beginning of the class to answer that. Beginning of the class we said because the living entity, you know, the Brahman doesn't have qualities that he has, he can't understand it, you know, or Krishna has unlimited qualities that we don't have, he can't understand it. So the difficulty comes here is because we don't have this quality, therefore we can't explain it nicely. That is the point we come back to. And you can explain something you have, but here we don't have, so we have trouble explaining.
Maybe the devotees that have developed particular natures like that, maybe they are satisfied in a particular situation, but if for Krishna's service they have to be put into another situation, then that may not be so...
That's a good, very nice point.
Yeah. Like, you know, a preacher, he cannot be regulated, and he has to, like, give up his own, what he... may find beneficial for his sadhana and so on, for the sake of preaching.
Yeah.
So then he has to be more of like an all-rounder.
Yeah, that point? That's a very nice point. He's just saying that someone becomes very, you know, good in their particular area and this and that, but then Krishna may want them to kind of, instead of being so specific, be more of an all-rounder. Like just while he was saying, came to mind is, I've seen that sometimes you have those preachers, they can go in and open up a new spot. They can go into where there's nothing, start something, deal with all the insanity that's there in the beginning. But as soon as it starts to become regulated and all that, they can't relate to it anymore. And then other devotees come in and manage it, and they kind of like go away. Some who understand this nature of them, then there's no real problem with this. because then they look for people who can be regular, and once they're situated, then they gracefully bow out, because they just say, you know, that's, I can't take it any farther. And then they go to a new place and like that. But then someone who can't see that, then they try to sit there and run the whole thing because they started it, they did all these things, but then they're not actually, they can't run an organized thing. They can only develop, start something from scratch. And then you end up with this strange situation. The very person that started the whole yatra, you know, gets turfed out because he can't relate to the situation or anybody and just gets in the way, and other people who can work with a very regulated, organized thing just say this person doesn't know what's going on. So, because they, by not being able to grow with the situation and transform, then it makes it more difficult. Well, if they can be more of an all-rounder, then they can expand or develop as these things go on, like that. Or at least, if not, then recognize one's nature and one's limitations and stick to that. That's a nice one. Basically, Prabhupada points here, the question of, means, such processes are very dear to the Lord, and He accepts a person engaged in them. Basically here, just as what the verse says, completely engage themselves with faith, making Krishna the supreme goal. You know, so it may take some time to get to that platform of faith, but that is... So it seems this complete engagement with Krishna as the goal is what will create all these good qualities. That seems to be the point being made here. May become more clear that maybe this is the natural question and the step why the last six chapters are here. Because this is the end of the middle six where devotion is explained. So naturally one wants to know how to get there, how to acquire these qualities, what is the essential point. So then in the first six, then the what was being explained was that by performance of duty, non-attached or detached performance of duty, one develops knowledge. And Nishkam Karma Yoga means that the emphasis is on the knowledge. So then these next chapters, these last chapters, then explain that knowledge by which performing devotional service you get the best results. So hopefully your question will be answered as we progress. Are you satisfied with that, or?
I know you could say more.
This, they call it. One sees, yeah. One sees qualities in others that one themselves has.
Narottam Das Thakur says that when you approach a sadhu, you have the fortune to reflect their qualities.
so many sadhus are here. Here's Janani Vas, Pankaj Dangri, and so many others. So you are reflecting from there. I mean, they are gracious enough that they thought that maybe I could sit here, and they're engaging me in my prescribed duty. I'm supposed to study and speak. That's my duty. But instead I'm, you know, building grass houses and doing all kinds of other strange things. So they thought, well, now is a chance. The flood's going on. He can't get involved in all these other side distracting activities. So now we can actually engage him properly in his duties. So on their order and insistence, then we are actually, for probably once in our lives, performing our prescribed duties. So it is their good qualities that are. And they even peacefully sit here and let me babble on and encourage me and all that.
In the beginning of the class, something I couldn't understand was you were making discrimination between the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis. And you said that the Brahmavadis, they accept Krishna as a spiritual body, the Mayavadis do not.
Yeah.
So, what is that mentality? They're accepting Krishna as a spiritual body, but in relationship to themselves and their relationship with Krishna, do they understand they've got spiritual bodies? Or?
I don't. Did you hear? Means the question was, is in the beginning we were discussing about the monists, the Brahmavadis, saying that they accept Krishna's body as Brahman, while the Mayavadis don't. Like that. So then they don't. So then what is the... Do they see, if they accept Krishna's body as spiritual, do they see themselves as having a spiritual form? It's not so much they see as spiritual as Satchitananda, they just understand the sat portion. So to them, everything is Brahman. Even the rocks, the mountains, the streams, the animals, everything is Brahman. It's just that before they didn't realize it, now they realize it. So then when Krishna's there, he's also Brahman. They don't distinguish that necessarily he's the Parabrahman, but they make no offense because he is Brahman, you know, like that. But it's just the beginning stage, right? The Paramatma realization is higher because then you understand the spiritual form and the Brahman, but you still haven't understand. So knowledge is there and eternity is there. So you have chit. You have sat with the Brahman understanding, the chit with the Paramatma. But Ananda is not there because Ananda means relationship. So in the Bhagavatam we see those yogis, after attaining Paramatma realization, then they took up devotional service. And that started, so that exchange between the Lord and themselves, they took that up. And then from taking that up, then it becomes...
I was into a lecture once where they invited one scientist to speak, give class. So he was, of course, a bit of a thing there, because he said that they were asking about his book, which was a nice class, actually. But he was saying there's no difference between the form and not form. So they said, which is a greater? Rose was saying, which is, he said, you can't say. He said, then both must be there. The form and not form must both be there. So he wouldn't distinguish which was greater. That's Brahmavadi.
Yeah, Brahmavadi like that. They just can't, because they're both there. To them, it's there's all there is Brahman. They don't have knowledge of Chit and Ananda, really. You know, they have, materially they have the scriptures, this, that. It's also Brahman. So it's just kind of like somehow or another manifestations of Brahman. They don't go deeper into it, how it's all happening, how it's all working. Only when you come to Paramatma realization, then you understand how it's working more. But you all can only still only understand part. because Paramatma is only expansion of an expansion of an expansion of, you know, and just like that, only a partial expansion of Krishna. And then why he would be in the material world and all the exchange and all that, until one understands Krishna, Bhagavan, one doesn't understand the whole thing. So it's still only partial. You know? Because Brahman is there. They don't understand it's just Krishna's effulgence. Krishna's form then emits the Brahma Jyoti. And then on that Brahma Jyoti, all existences, spiritual and material, are resting. They're being held by that. You know? Like that. So the Tam is sitting on the Brahman. The material world is on the Brahman. Just that in this portion of the Brahman there's a shadow, there's a cloud. And that cloud then creates shadow. So the Brahman here is dark instead of light. And the sun is reflection of the Brahman, meaning the outside the cloud, where it's light. Like that. But it's still all Brahman. In Brahman, everything's resting on Brahman.
So the Okumaras, when they actually smelt the tulsi leaves on Krishna's feet, and found there was an extra attraction there, so then their realization was that, then this is Parabrahma.
Yeah, they realize that there's something beyond. They realize that there is spiritual senses, spiritual emotion, spiritual attraction, all that, because they knew they were not on the material platform. So they couldn't experience material senses. To be happy means they smell things, but if smells nice, doesn't nice, doesn't matter to them.
But they understood it was Brahman anyway.
Yeah. So by analyzing it, they understood that this is something special. And in this way, then they surrendered to the Lord.
Their feelings.
Yeah.
They was wondering why they were attracted to that smell. They were wondering why that smell was attracted to them. How can something attract us?
Yeah. Very, very good example. The Bhagavatam is very nice in that it gives so many examples of so many different devotees on different platforms and how they all attain perfection. Point is that whatever the stage, one can attain perfection. Just one has to have that determination, one must push on. That is the point. And then one is not disturbed by anything. So one has to know that and endeavor for that, whatever the platform. Otherwise we get caught up so much, and if we don't apply the philosophy, then we end up with difficulty. Lack of understanding, lack of cooperation, lack of inspiration. And because our inspiration, everything comes from hearing, from Shabda, then everything develops. Shabda is the platform on which our whole spiritual existence is based. It's from Shabda and all that we develop. And we develop the desire to associate with devotees, to surrender, to take up the process very seriously, like this. So we have to hear. So this hearing process becomes most important, most prominent. And then from that, then kirtana. And we discuss that with others. And that then increases our faith. So by associating with devotees and you know, the basis is this hearing and chanting and remembering, then everything comes very, very nicely. The whole process develops very well. Like that. Otherwise it doesn't develop so nicely. You know, if we ignore that, then we don't get very far. We get absorbed in whatever we're doing. As long as it's, you know, here as it mentioned, as long as it's pretty much like full-time temple service and all that, then it's more easy to remember, like that. But even then, one can tend to forget. But if one is doing prescribed duties beyond that, you know, that especially within Varnashram, then it can be quite distracting if one is not remembering. Krishna. If one is not associating with devotees, if one is not getting that constant inspiration to serve, otherwise it can be very, very disturbing. So that's why all, you know, constant hearing and chanting is recommended. Then one knows how to connect wherever one's at. That is the art, is to be able to connect everything to Krishna. That art of work is how to engage everything in connection to Krishna. It becomes what we're desiring. But unless one studies, unless one discusses, one doesn't necessarily know how to do that. Brahmavadis meditate, just Brahman. Brahmavadis meditate on Brahman. I mean, that's all they see, is just Brahman. They're in a certain way very innocent. They're like little children. They don't know. All they know is certain things happen, and that's all. They don't know what's behind it. You know? They don't understand all what's going on. They're very innocent, like that. So all they know is that everything's Brahman. But to get to that platform is very, very, very difficult. So it's Brahmavadis, actual Brahmavadis are very rare. I mean, it's whatever we see nowadays out speaking, walking around and engaged in missions and this and that, they're not Brahmavadis. They're Mayavadis. Because a Brahmavadi, there's no need to speak. It's all Brahman anyway. So why do you have to preach? You don't need to preach. It's all Brahman anyway. Everything's Brahman. So they never preach. So if someone is espousing a philosophy, then you can understand they're not Brahmavadis. Right? Four Kumaras are just wandering around the universe. They weren't talking or this or that. They bump in and they might say something. You know, Brahma said, you know, okay, now your first one's manifest, now you get married and procreate and all that, and they said, we'd rather not, you know, it's all Brahman, why get involved in all this, you know, what's the need? Sukadeva wandering around, he wasn't talking and preaching and all that, right? So, Mayavadis, they talk so much, you know, like frogs, they talk, and then the big snake of Maya comes and swallows them up. They're just good talkers. People are most attracted by these big Mayavadi speakers. Just they speak so nicely and sweetly. They're very expert orators. Like that. That is their expertise. They just know how to present something so nicely. Just the sounds, you know, the words they use, how they say it, how they develop it, how they catch your attention. Like that. I remember, I think it was Shatadani was saying that kind of like in the 70s or something, in the 70s, in Calcutta, then he was at some, well, you know, big, because in the very early days, all the members first were all the biggest, richest, most influential people. Then with time it came down to more general people became members. But in the beginning, only the biggest, richest, most influential people. So he happened to be at one of their houses, and they were just going to a program. So they said, come with us. And they went to this program. Or no, they went to someone else's house, I think. Or, you know, it means these people were big enough that one of these big orators came and did kind of a program just for a smaller group. And he was commenting just their ability to speak is so expert, you know? And Shatadanya, he had his major in college, university, I think, was... Philosophy is it's not called public speaking, but it's It's kind of, it's got some other name, but it basically means how to present, how to speak, how to present, especially philosophy, like that. So then, so he was commenting how expert this is, and then all the life members, he says, you're all devotees, and he's speaking all this Mayavad like that. You know, why are you interested? He says, nobody said it so nicely. You know, they're just intrigued by the words he uses, how he uses them, how he just generates the whole discussion and involves in them. And so it's just like a mystic siddhi. It's just a perfection of speech. And that's what all the big ones that you hear about. You know, if you've ever heard of that, they all had that. Otherwise, there's millions of Mayavadis, and you never hear of them. But a few handful you hear of, because of their ability to speak.
That's this all. One singer who came here one time to the program, with a panel over there.
Oh, yeah. What was his name?
Murari.
Murari Bapu, yeah.
I mean, he was charming. I was completely charmed by him.
Yeah.
That's, and I knew it was a city. I think he's so charming and attractive and captivating. I'm not a devotee.
No.
I could understand. It must be a city.
Yeah.
He was not a devotee? No.
Not really. One could call him an ordinary devotee.
Yeah.
But he's not sampradayic.
Depends on the audience he's speaking.
Yeah. Means for us, he does the rather straight conservative like that. He also has a little bit more sahajya program for those who are more, I say, more
required.
Yeah, a little more spontaneous in their desires.
Specializes in Ram.
Yeah, especially Ram and all that, because it's there. The North India, that's very popular, but too, that's what's very popular amongst the wealthy North Indians. And most of them are Ram Bhaktis, also Krishna Bhaktis, like that, but. That's where all the money is. I mean, if one noticed his lifestyle and how everything was happening, one would understand, some of the inspiration to work in this. He says you got that power of speech from Hanuman, and it was supposedly somebody was speaking and everyone thought it was him. And then later it was revealed it was Hanuman or something like that. And then a black chudder was left where that speaker was. So he got that black chudder. So that's why they were distributing black chudders and everyone was wearing black chudders to like this. So that's his claim to fame. That's his story, how he got it together. Like that. Everyone has some interesting story like that. But like that, there's many. In South, there's one person, very powerful. He also claims to be a Gaudiya, but he mishmash, Because in South, they're not Gaudiyas, but because the way he can speak, and he can sing, and also. Many of them you see have a combination of this, speaking, singing, like this, like that. And he's a very good speaker. He would say all kinds of crazy stuff, but it sounds fine, it was someone with, I think some devotees went to his house in there, and he asked him, then I think his wife, or at least one of the four wives, were serving him coffee. And the devotee asked about coffees, devotees, like that, is it proper? And that's just, he's explaining that, see, you have the coffee, it is black. This is just like Krishna. And you have the cream, which is golden, like Radharani. It's white like Radharani. And you pour them together, and it turns golden, like Gauranga. Like that. Then you put the sweetness, the sugar of rasa, And then it becomes a very, like this, he's explaining. I mean, he's a good speaker, right? You know, you think, wow, this is, I never thought of that, right? You know? But, you know, he's just explaining it so he can drink coffee. You know?
The devotees were convinced?
Huh?
Were the devotees convinced to take coffee?
I'm not sure if they engaged in the what do you call it?
The
garanga,
the
garanga, garanga rasa. Yes. Like that.
That was Chandra Shaker.
Huh?
Chandra
Shaker. Oh, he was there.
Yeah.
He asked him. Yeah, that's right. They went with Admatattva and him when we were in Madras. They went to visit him.
Seeing Krishna and everything.
Yes, you have. How you see Krishna and everything? Krishna in your coffee also. Like this. They're very expert. They're smooth talkers. Chinmayananda, very expert in talking. Very expert.
When they're speaking, I find it earlier. So they say something and it's, you know, wow, it's right on. It's like a realization. And everything they say is really, that's right. Because they're speaking really. Then when the program finishes, you think, what
did
he say?
What's he doing?
It's just very cleverly presented. You know, like, was it Sai Baba? When he'd come in, he'd say, you know, I came, I have come, I will come. You know, and then you think, wow. And then he'll start speaking on something else before you can really think about it. Go, hey, that was crazy. You think, wow, you know, it catches your attention. Very catchy phrases, you know. Or like, what was this? The Vivekananda. He opens his Chicago speech, something like, "I offer my respects to the ladies and gentlemen who are, I offer my respects to myself in the form of the audience of ladies and gentlemen." You know, and everybody's like, "What?" You know, and then, you know, immediately goes into something else. His timing is very important in all these. Is that you say something very far out, and before it catches your mind, because it's just different, you know? You know, you just go, wow. And then before you can think about it and go, hey, wait a minute, he's already moved on to the next one, you know? And then at the end, then you're left with...
nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Who is telling me this? Even in the material... sphere, just in the business, you know, all these fix-its for business management and, you know, Kobe, all these kind of people. I forget who this was. One devotee was telling me that he, and I think before he had become a devotee, but he was very, you know, inquisitive and all this, and he went to one of these big kind of like, I think it was a social thing or counseling, something, some kind of social interface kind of thing like that. And the guy, again, big, you know, discussion and this and elaborate and all kinds of things, and it sounds just great, fabulous. And then, you know, when it finishes, you know, everybody gets up and walks out. You know, a few people come out and pat the guy and shake his hand and great, fabulous, I'm really inspired and all that, and then they left. This devotee, he was sitting in the back. He sat there for a while. You know, while all this is going on, he's thinking about all this. You know? And finally, when everybody's left and all it is the guy's there finally packing up, putting his last few papers in his briefcase, he walks down the aisle and comes up to the guy. And he asks him, says, "You're saying all this, but how much of this is really practical, you know, for this audience that you've just, you know, for the people here?" And the guy, you know, the orator stopped, kind of looked around to make sure the place was empty. And he says, "Actually, for nobody here." He says, it's business. He says, "The people that actually can apply it are already applying it. And for you know, the common person who doesn't come to these programs, you know, it's like they're not interested anyway. And the people that come to these programs..." He says, "They come to listen and they feel good about it, but they're not able to apply it. Otherwise, they'd already be doing it. There's such common sense principles that those who are successful, you know, it's like you study all the people who are successful, and then you say, these are the principles of successful people. But you studied the successful people to get that. You didn't study the common person, because the common person doesn't have it. So his point was, is basically nobody gets much benefit. They feel good about it, because they're interested how to improve the life. And so if you give them ideas, which are the factual points that you could improve, but if they could improve, they would have already done it. So it just makes them feel good, you know. So, you know, it's happy, I can make them feel happy, and they make me happy, they give me money. So like that, life goes on, you know. That's his point. It's just... I mean, all these grihasthas and that they talk to, all these fat marwaris and all that they espouse all this Mayavad philosophy, they don't come any closer to any self-realization. Just they feel good. They thought they've been religious, they've listened to some philosophy, they feel good. And the other person feels good because either he's getting a lot of money or a lot of fame or position or influence or like that. So in this way they take care of each other. But neither are getting any benefit.
Another one of the early Vivekananda Swami, he was talking to one, he was staying in his house, and there was a Swami who used to come there and speak to the local neighborhood. So he told us how the Swami got put on the spot one day, and he started to laugh, you know, to reveal himself. He wasn't actually a good Swami. Some habits that Swamis don't have. So then Rathananda Swami said, "You see, he's bogus." I said, "We know."
Who said?
This man is this ordinary person.
Huh.
He was one of the audience. But we were staying in his house for something. So he said, "We know." He said, "But he's such a charmer that nobody really minds." So when he was exposed, he kind of smiles and laughs, and everyone is, he's such a nice person. They brush it all over. So they know he's not presenting the real thing, but he's such a charmer the way he does it that they don't mind.
Yeah. I guess
so they don't know what situation.
Just like it's a more natural, I guess. More natural. Yeah, I guess it's just a more natural form of entertainment than, let's say, television. You know, everybody knows the television, it's illusion, it doesn't happen, but. You know, it's nicely presented, you like it, good special effects or good sounds, or in the same way, you know, it's all doesn't really mean anything, but you know, they speak nicely. It's interesting.
why are you following them? Why are you go there? Why are they such a charming?
Some of the remnants of Ravana.
Oh.
No, they did it yesterday.
Did he?
Yeah. There's somehow a quick little something happened out in the field.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Flooded out.
Yeah. I don't know. So after this class, when we were going back, then remember we saw a little fire over there?
That's it.
Yeah. A little fire and a couple of firecrackers. Somehow or another, the remembrance of him sometimes lasts for a few days. Any of the kids get a hold of any of the firecrackers.
Question. And you were saying that when everybody gets a bad reaction, someone gives you trouble or something. So Krishna sanctions in the mode of material make the arrangement. But then previously, in earlier lecture, you were saying Krishna had said he personally takes care, and that person had scratched it out, and then Krishna personally came and delivered the goods. So to whom does Krishna personally take care, and how does he actually personally take care?
Mm. then question is how does Krishna personally take care? If we take the example of some devotees having some difficulties, someone's coming giving problems, then what does it mean by Krishna personally comes and takes care of that? So then we're dealing with same principle, but two different points that are being made here. The one point is that the maintenance of the devotee, you know, the needs of the devotee, all those things Krishna says he's personally taking care, both spiritual and material. But it's not that always taking care means it's always wonderful and nice. Right? Just like the mother's taking care of the child. But sometimes when the child's sick, there are restrictions, there's bitter medicine, a diet that they don't necessarily appreciate, or, you know, nice, itchy, you know, wool socks or mufflers around your throat that you kind of wish you didn't have to wear. You know, all these different kinds of things that one may not understand. And then one just takes it because of the nature of Satchidananda. Ananda is happiness. And we're conditioned to material happiness. Then we equate someone likes us when material happiness is developing, and someone doesn't like us when material happiness is not developing. So, you know, our mother doesn't like us when she's, you know, feeding us all this terrible tasting medicine and all these things, you know. And then she likes us when she's giving us nice stuff and what we want and all that. But so we have to be careful we don't apply that same principle to Krishna, that when he's giving nice facilities, nice position, everything's going very nicely for us, that Krishna then likes us. And when it's not, then Krishna doesn't like us. You understand? So it may be that Krishna is arranging all these things very nicely. Like that. Oh, you mean it means through the Paramatma?
No. See, you made the point that if someone's giving you trouble, Krishna seems to be sanctioning on the modes of material nature carrying out. But in the previous, you're saying Krishna personally takes care, which means not modes of material nature, it's actually Krishna personally taking care. So what does it actually mean?
Yeah. Well, there's a different, also different levels, one would say, also is there.
Yeah.
The advanced, he personally takes care. I think there was one class or something where Prabhupada is saying that Krishna's taking care, but he's telling Maya to give this, give that. You know, so when we, you know, we need a car, a vehicle or something for the temple, and Maya arranges that for the temple under Krishna's sanction. Like that. So the point is he does personally, as that affection and all that is there, because he reciprocates as we reciprocate. So that devotee who is dependent upon Krishna always turns to Krishna, then Krishna, he reciprocates like that. He personally does it. But if we're not so much thinking like that, then it won't be so much.
So let's say if someone's giving trouble, you can think that this is because of my previous activities. But then maybe you could also think that Krishna is personally taking care. He's trying to teach me something.
Yeah, but he gets all these things done at once.
Yeah.
It's not that Krishna personally arranges the person to not like you. That's just reactions of your karma. He reduces. Now he can reduce down to practically nothing. You know? Or like that. Or reduce it to nothing. But if he leaves it more prominent, there may be something there to learn, either for ourselves or for someone else.
If it's a reaction of your karma, then in what sense? Because if something good happens, it's a reaction of your good karma. If something bad happens, it's a reduced reaction of your bad karma. So in what sense is Krishna personally taking care?
No, things that are good also is not necessarily that they're from good karma, from devotional service. Then these are just facilities that Krishna is giving. Like that. See, the devotee, it's like this. Anything good is happening is arranged by Krishna. Anything bad is happening is because of my nonsense.
He should have that mentality.
Yeah. So like that, then one discriminates.
But even if it's because of my nonsense, Krishna may be arranging that so that I can learn something.
Of course, that's the only way we should be thinking. Like that. If we don't learn from it, then what's the benefit? Because the point is when Krishna's saying here, equal poise and happiness, distress, fear and anxiety. Now it's not that these things aren't going to come. So when they come, we think this has come just due to my previous nonsense activities or due to my offenses. But while they come, he is equal poised. You know? So like that. Tolerant, self-controlled. Self-controlled means there's some reason to not be controlled. The mind is, but he's controlled. So it doesn't mean the mind won't wander all over the place, or there won't be opportunity for sense gratification if they don't take it.
So that good and bad...
Without cares means there's reason for caring. Things are all falling apart and the Y2K bug is just, you know, destroyed the three planetary systems, and you know, India's computers just crashed and like that, and rain for the next 6 months has been cancelled because they can't figure out where it was supposed to go, all this kind of stuff. But he knows Krishna will take care.
The good and the bad karma that's coming, Krishna, you can maybe think that Krishna is personally arranging it to...
for our benefit.
Like, timely for our benefit. It's like, you know,
yeah.
Maybe we're supposed to get it, but it's like, he does it so that it's for the maximum effect, so we'll...
Yes.
I mean, we should see Krishna's hand in it.
Yes, we always see Krishna's hand.
Not that just simply it's the mechanics of the material nature is...
Mechanics of material nature are never mechanics of this material nature. It means the Lord is always sanctioning. It's just whether we recognize Krishna there and get benefit from it, or we don't recognize Krishna there and don't get benefit.
Yeah.
But he takes personal interest in the devotees. But at the same time, he says, to that degree you surrender, he reciprocates. See, the point being made by Arjunacharya is that the Lord always just does through his energies. At Krishna's point, no, he personally do. But it's also to that degree that you surrender, to that degree he's personally taking care. Yeah, that Krishna is always involved.
And the other question is, how does he... Because you said earlier that Prabhupada said that Krishna makes the arrangement through Maya.
That's when we're not so advanced. Because I think the devotee was saying something about, you know, in other words, that side is, we always say Krishna's taking care of this, that, until we get proud. Then we may bring in the other side. Because when the pride is there, Krishna goes away. I mean, if he can go away from the gopis at the Rasa dance, surely he can go away from us. Like that.
So how does he actually take personal care of the pure devotees? I mean...
I don't know. You have to ask one here to get the proper answers. The jnanis have their limit on how much they can speak on these subjects.
Yes. It says in the Bhagavad Gita that those great devotees, they come under the protection of divine energy. Prabhupada comments in the purport that they come under the shelter of Radharani, actually.
Yeah. Like that. Internal potency will take care.
Internal. Oh, the yoga mind.
Yeah.
Not the maha.
Yeah.
That is like personal protection.
Yeah.
Yoga mind.
Yes.
That stage where Krishna personally takes care of Prabhupada, Krishna personally takes care of his pure devotees. At that stage, you can understand what's going on.
Because they're not bewildered. He said that those are not bewildered.
That before that stage, if before that stage, you it doesn't really matter who's doing it, because you're understanding Krishna's doing it, whether he's doing it for the material nature or doing it personally. It doesn't really matter if we see it, that everything is Krishna's mercy. Like you have always said, there's no difference between from hearing from Krishna that getting instructions directly from Krishna or getting instructions directly from Krishna through the spiritual master. Like that, material nature is giving us another opportunity to train with Krishna. So for the Vaishnava, if he sees like that, then everything becomes spiritual. For the person who is seeing Krishna, then the material world doesn't exist anymore. But it doesn't make any difference, really. If we see Krishna, because he's ultimately doing it anyway. But personally or indirectly, until we come to that platform of understanding our relationship with Krishna, we will not.
Are you happy with that answer? You're just wondering if Krishna cooked the custard pie yesterday. Is that personally, or did he do it through Maya, or if he did it through the Mahamaya, or
if he put the hair
so
in
Mahamaya is Kamakya, right? So in this way, then he has done it through.
Whether he put the cockroach in the sambar, was that?
He did. Krishna put the cockroach. No, but his point is very well taken. Of just. It doesn't matter because you see Krishna is doing it anyway.
Right.
However he wants to do it, that's up to him. That we don't demand. You know, it's just how he likes to get it done. We're surrendered to Krishna. We know Krishna is getting it done. How he's doing it, that's not important for us. But Krishna shows that when Arjunacharya is saying that he wouldn't do it personally, then they're showing, no, we also can do it personally. We also do. We are personally involved, whether we personally giving or we personally instruct Yoga Maya, we personally instruct Maha Maya, but we personally are involved. Like that. So it's not important.
When I say mechanics of material nature means.
Yeah, well, this is coming up.
Not personally involved.
Means when we want to get into the mechanics. That is coming in tomorrow's class. Nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. All these other chapters. And they deal with how the material nature functions and our relationship and Krishna's relationship. Nature, the enjoyer and consciousness, the three modes of material nature, the yoga of the Supreme Person, the divine and demoniac natures, the divisions of faith. So that deals all with the functions. In other words, the whole jnana section of this Nishkam Karma Yoga is all explained there. Then how to make it work.
Today's chapter, wasn't it? Krishna said he personally comes on Garuda.
Yeah, personally comes on Garuda. If that's in the purport. Yeah, it's in Prabhupada's purport. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O Sena Prita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. And then Prabhupada says in the purport that he comes on Garuda and picks us up.
Does Deva send a flower airplane or something?
No, he comes himself.
Insignificant mustard seed within the bag of mustard seeds. Insignificant living entity there, Krishna's personally coming in.
Mm-hmm. generate? Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.
Bhagavad Gita ki?
Yeah.
Samaveta Bhakta Brinda ki? Chanita Gold Pena ki?
That was the essence. You have understood the essence of these six chapters. You have understood the essence of these six chapters in your last statement.
Well, what did he say? Mahaprasada Kinichara.
Now, an insignificant universe, like in the Bhagavad Gita, sees, and within that, an insignificant, tiny little entity.
Mm.
How much bhakti Krishna has?
Yeah.
Are you a karma or not? This bhakti.
Yeah. Well, Krishna is. That's what's so wonderful, is that Krishna is so. He is so personal and so in the dealings and so affectionate that he'll come and pick up the living entity. He's so concerned. We're just one of unlimited living entities in this universe, and there's unlimited universes. Still, he's concerned about each individual one.
Yeah.
That's his.
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about nice people. You know, there's no one nicer. You know? He's the nicest.
There was one person. When he used to meet people, he'd speak with one person, and then he'd say, what's that person's name? And then, oh, that's so-and-so. Then he'd go over there, Mr. So-and-so, I'm nice to see you. And that person, he knows me. That's so nice. He remembers me. Okay.
Yeah.
Then he'd ask him, what's that person's name? And he'd go over there, oh, I know. And then, remembered me. No? And like, so then everyone feels kind of, they're remembered, they're really appreciated.
Yeah.
And I feel really happy. And Krishna is remembering every single one of us. It's really
And he didn't even have to ask
nice
anybody.
Krishna's the nicest
yeah.
person is remembering you.
How about that ability also?
Mm.
You always remember names. I think it's in the, when he first went to America. He went to the YMCA or something like that. And someone right at that time, and he just casually met someone, and the next time he saw him, he was given an interview, and he said, I was surprised how he remembered my name. We just met for a few moments, but I was surprised how he.
Yeah.
Someone was pointing it out because it's in that. What's his name? Dale Carnegie?
Dale Carnegie,
That's one of his things. If you have to become really popular, you have to an art of remembering names, and then it's very, you can become very important. He's pointing out how Prabhupada had that natural.
Mm.
Supreme, he remembers everyone's name.
Everyone's name.
Every universe.
Not only that, he arranges for their name.
Yeah.
Through the three modes. Yeah, it's amazing.
He not only knows everyone's name, he knows everyone's personality.
Yeah.
But that when Brahma spoke with the cowherd voice, he expanded into all the different personalities.
Yeah.
So he knows exactly what everyone's personality
is. So that's interesting. Yes, it's also that here, those last few verses, that Krishna is pointing out the personality of the devotee. That means you have to know it so well that you can say the qualities behind it. You know, it's like everybody knows a particular person, but if you say, describe the qualities, you'd really have to think about it. But here, just Krishna can just say them. That particular personality, or like this, then has these qualities. So ideally, one should at least fit into one of those categories, not the last. Hmm. I came across a very interesting thing. That was in the Vimala Prasad brought it, about this point about apichet sudarla charo, about the thing about, and they quickly become righteous, or not quickly become righteous, is it? They quickly become righteous. So he will very quickly become. So they didn't have any problem that he's saintly or that he'll become, but if he already is saintly, how he'll become quickly righteous. So they were discussing this point, how to work that out. And they were discussing, couldn't come to any conclusion. Then they saw Bhakti Vinod walking by in the space chanting his japa. And then one of them said, well, let's ask him. He's a Vaishnav, he can explain it. So then they called Bhakti Vinod Thakur down. And then Bhakti Vinod came and they told him the points. And then he says, oh, it's very easy. It means anyone who understands that even this advanced Vaishnava, even he has difficulty or falls, he's still a sadhu, then that person who thinks like that, they very quickly become righteous. And that solved the dilemma of Brahma, Shiva, and Yamaraj.
It's actually the person who's thinking like that.
Yeah. There is the person who thinks like that. Same time, Vishwanath shows all the different ways. Like that. Because the thing is there's many, many points in there. The important thing is bringing out just what the acharyas bring out. You know? This is the thing, is that Vishwanath has made his points, Baladeva has made his points, Bhakti Vinod, like this, they've all made their points. So Prabhupada is taking that and giving to us what we can understand the best. Because otherwise sometimes you get into, just like, you know, the thing is you go to the heavenly planets and you fall from the heavenly planets. Eventually Prabhupada only gets into that. Then some places, you know, and that's all Prabhupada basically mentions. Because you hear that, no one thinks more about it. It doesn't open up other treacherous side things. Then you say, well, they fall out of there and die out of the planet. And you accept that, but then you wonder, well, how do they die? You know, I mean, do they die when they hit the earth, you know, just from the impact? Or, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, they die of starvation because it takes so long to fall. Whatever. So when you explain the whole thing about how they're falling through the space and when they get down to the antariksha, then the yakshas and rakshas come and eat them. And then he falls in the tear and that falls in the earth. That grows as grain, and then somebody eats the grain, and then they're injected in the womb, and like this. So then, you know, then if you're not really worried about these things, you just go, you know, it very clearly just removes all illusion about the glories of the heavenly planets. But if you haven't kind of like situated yourself in that, then I was bombarded by questions. Well, if that's how mechanically the ones come from the heavenly planets, how do the souls that are leaving the hellish region, I mean the lower heavenly planets and lower, how do they get into the womb, and then, you know, other living entities also, is that, I mean, how do they get into the womb? You know, let's say, you know, somebody else here and then they died, how did they get there? They wanted to know the whole mechanic, and that's absolutely nothing to do with the conversation. We couldn't care less. The whole purpose was is just destroying the illusion of going to the heavenly planets and enjoying. So therefore, if you somehow bring in all these points, which are all there, the shastras tell, I mean, unlimited details about all kinds of things, you know? But then it may distract the mind completely away from Krishna. So only how much is necessary for that time, for that thing, is explained, and not more than that. That's why you'll find one shastra, a certain amount is explained, another shastra, another thing, because there's different people.
So are you saying that we shouldn't quote the previous?
No, it means we have to be very careful in quoting, that we make sure that it comes in line with our acharya. Yeah, if it doesn't, then...
How do we know? Because if Prabhupada says...
Prabhupada says a point, and therefore taking that as the point, you explain what the acharyas have said. Yeah. In other words, you can't see that Prabhupada, Baladeva, Vishwanath have different views. It's the same view. If you see it's different views, then one is not seeing so properly. Because Prabhupada is saying the same thing. you know, what Vishwanath said in that whole elaboration on the different personalities, and then, but one who has all these together, then he is the most dear, and explains that that's what the meaning to means, but, because he's introducing this concept. All this is there, but then he brings in the thing, one who has all, he is the most dear, you know, very, very dear. Prabhupada's already said that in the previous purport. He's already said it in the purport before that, saying that the reason all these are given is that one should develop all these qualities. You know? And it comes from the process of developing. So Vishwanath said that, he just brought in the technical things of exactly what it is, why you would have different, because there's different personalities, and one concentrates on one concentrates on another. But Krishna is saying, like you were saying, one has to be more well-rounded. So Prabhupada's already said it, so based on that, then you can say something on it. But otherwise, to not connect that with what Prabhupada said, it's a distraction. So what, that's very important.
You get into this whole discussion, how we fell into the material world.
Yes, you get into that, because you waste your time, because you'll say, well, Jiva says one thing, and Prabhupada says another. But they're saying the same thing. It means time and space is what we're conditioned by. The manifestation of the jiva is not controlled by time or space. Right? His liberation is not controlled by time or space. So how are you going to understand the topic in the first place? If we're conditioned, it's not possible. Just by definition, you can't. You can't understand how we came, where, you can't understand that. And where we come from, we know we come from Krishna. Now how Krishna wants to manifest and all this, that's up to him, as long as it's come from Krishna. Therefore we don't get involved. Because we discussed this the other day, the guest house boys, very bewildered by all these things, and they really wanted to ask about these things. So then the counselor for the guest house boys arranged the thing and all that, and I gave him basically an explanation starting from this difficulty of time, place, and time and space. So we have to see that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. But, you know, things have always, we just can't understand how it works. And after explaining the whole thing, and then, you know, going into elaborations on different aspects, you know, probably about 10 different aspects for maybe an hour, all the questions that came back were all related to time and space. Each and every one, though they didn't think it was time and space. But I kept mentioning the counselor that, see, this is a space question, this is a time question. And they could see it, but those who were asking the questions couldn't.
Because there's no space in the ladder.
Oh, I see. This is a space problem.
It's
a
problem. Yes. Adara Shakti is not working properly.
Huh? Yes, the Adara Shakti.
Be bold.